We acknowledge the traditional lands of Kaurna people. We pay our respects to their elders past and present. I let everyone know that the audio of the General Council meeting will be recorded and made available. Meanwhile, we're live streaming the event from some elected members' site. I ask elected members at this stage whether any of you foreshadow that you might have a conflict of interest with any item on the agenda, Councillor Crossan.
Yes, I'll be declaring a conflict of interest for the Peel River level.
The MSI of Pines issue. And that's a material interest, I think, due to residents.
I think it's from perceived.
Sorry, it was a question. I'm not sure.
It wasn't perceived.
I didn't mean to tell you.
But either way, I'll be moving anyway.
There are no others. Sorry, Councillor Blissful.
Thank you, Your Worship. I've got a perceived conflict or real conflict as far as the Oaklands Park redevelopment. There's a family members in that area.
Would someone like to move confirmation of the minutes of the last June Council meeting? Move Councillor Masika, second Councillor Mason. All those in favour?
I think they've joined.
Anyone against? Just checking in with Councillor Hutchinson. Can he hear us?
Councillor Hutchinson can't hear you.
Just a brief technology break. What can we do about that? So Jason can hear Luke. Meanwhile, I've been informed there are some members of public in the gallery interested in the Aleppo Pines issue, and as chair of the meeting, I'm interested in bringing that matter slightly up in the agenda, but please be aware that we also have some finance professionals in the gallery as well in respect of the annual financial statements, etc. So it is important that we deal with those first. So I can't say it'll be the next 5 minutes, it might be an hour away, but we'll be able to move it up the ladder a few runs at least. How are we going? There you go. I don't know if there's maybe a telephone connection that we could make to have as an alternative.
It's good now.
Right, I think that we're all able to hear the meeting, so proceed. Sorry for the delay. I'll put that to vote again, confirmation of the minutes of the last general council meeting. All those in favour, raise your hand. That is carried unanimously, thank you. Would someone like to move that the communications reports, the written communications reports be received? Move to Councillor Schilling, second to Councillor Duncan. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously, thank you. Now, is this a meeting where we invite verbal reports from elected members? Second meeting of the month.
Yes.
So any member who wishes to may seek to inform us. Councillor Clancy.
I'd like to let people know about the activities that are happening in the upper level of the Marion Leisure and Fitness Centre. An EOI went out early last year, and YMCA was successful in the bid. I visited the site on Friday, and they've got about 50 kids there, young people. Every day, the young people have designed the area and space themselves. They're partnering with RASA and White Line to offer a employment program there. The children have, the young people have opportunities to go outside and play basketball and things like that to regulate, and I think it's a great use of the space.
Thank you. That does remind me, incidentally, that I recently raised with management the fact that some time ago, I think years ago, the council passed a resolution for staff to negotiate with the tenants about a contribution towards solar panels on the roof of the Marion Leisure and Fitness Centre. It seems that that didn't occur, so there aren't solar panels there, and I expect that that's now being actioned. Councillor,
I would like to congratulate staff on the readability and interest in the actual annual report. I think it's the most interesting presentation that I've read.
Thank you. And I'm sure staff will appreciate that. Councillor Hopp.
Thank you. I attended the Open State Residents Association, as you did, and Councillor Pryde. The oldest residents association in Australia, yes? They're a very applied and engaged group. There was a number of issues, one of which was the Clean Away to Waste contract. And we assured them that we'll be discussing that in an elected members forum, and I assume that is going to be coming up.
In the next month.
Yep. So apart from that, I'd like to advise members that next Friday, I'll be meeting with executives from Oakland's Green to talk to them in detail about trees in the precinct, the retention of trees, and their plans for replanting. And I'm told that Council's arborist might come along to that meeting as well, which is good news.
I'll make that work.
Yep, 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock.
Yep, thank you, Tony. Mr. Lyons, CEO. I thought it's important to tell members that leading up to the agenda item tonight. Thank you.
No. Very well. Going to the committee recommendations, would someone like to move the minutes be confirmed for both the infrastructure and strategy and finance and audit committee meetings? Councillor Schilling, seconded. Councillor Seeker, all those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. And now we come on to the financial reports. My suggestion is that, being fairly liberal with questions and so on, that we could take the four reports on block, if someone wishes to go that way. So that would be the annual financial statements, the Finance and Audit Committee annual report, City of Marion annual report, and the Local Government Finance Authority cash advance variation agreement report. if you want to go down that track, or you can always take them separately, Councillor Tilley.
I'd be prepared to move those in block.
Very good. Second, Councillor Schilling. So, Councillor Tilley, would you like to block discussion?
Well, I was very interested in some of the ratios. I have a question about the ratio about liabilities. I know we don't have a lot of liabilities, but it seems a very unusual thing to say that we've got minus 32% net liabilities over total assets or something. I think it's... Yeah, it's in that liability section. And other than that, I was really interested to note the one that talked about the how much we've got in buildings and how much we've got in infrastructure. So 115 million in buildings and 600 million in the other assets. I found those very interesting figures. In the debt ratios.
Yeah, just to...
So Mr. Barnwell, finance manager's here. Would you like to comment?
Yeah, I would address that. The ratios which are outlined on page 1 of the report. And the net financial liabilities ratio is a negative ratio because we have net financial assets as opposed to net financial liabilities, normally expressed as the liabilities over our total earning, and we've actually got net financial assets, and primarily due to our large cash holding, which obviously supports our reserves. That's why that is it. Well, it looks like a negative issue.
So, a subsidiary, when next year year after, we have the 15 million of Mitchell Park, that would change very dramatically.
Yeah, that would obviously, as we run down reserves, obviously there's you've got 18 million at the 30th of June, it's $18 million approximately in the assets in reserve, under reserves. As we run that down with the projects such as Mitchell Park and Mitchell Park is on borrowings, but the BMX and the soccer facilities, which are funded through them reserves, and bringing on borrowings potentially for Mitchell Park, that will actually change the value of the asset ratio, so that will actually impact on that.
Anything further, Councillor Telfer? Councillor Schilling, did you wish to speak to that? Then I'll just open up questions on any of that material, Councillor Hall.
Thank you. The first one is the water fund reserve. I've noticed there that as opposed to all the other reserves, it is actually at the executive's discretion as to how that's spent. And it's about $650,000 in it. Why is that so? Why has the administration got exclusive and unrestrained access to that without coming through council?
Through the chair, we actually came to council last year to request that, and council approved it. And the rationale behind that was it's a whole lot of small little day-to-day things. It might be a sand filter that needs upgrading, etc. We're not normally big numbers, but we did recommend to council that the day-to-day funding of that sort of infrastructure be given to the CEO, and that was approved by council.
Is there any view that if there was larger items that need to be moments or whatever, we would actually be consulted?
Definitely, and you are, I think it's in the November 4, we're coming back to talk about the extension up to Seacliff, etc. So that's a massive capital item. So that fund is more for upgrading or maintaining of the existing infrastructure, but large scale extension would be definitely coming back to council.
In the annual report, it's got the elected members' attendances at meetings, but with the committees, there's no mention of attendance at committees, yet the independent members' attendance is listed. So why the difference between the independent members' attendance stats and the elected members not being mentioned at all?
Now, I thought I saw that somewhere. Can any of the staff point to the appropriate page? But I'm pretty sure there's a table in there with committee attendances. Because I, of course, I checked the mayor's excellent attendance at the various committees, so I do recall that. 232. You might want to just check that, Councillor Hall.
Yep, no, you're quite clear.
Any other questions, Councillor Hall?
Yep. Bylaws. In the report, it talks about the number of complaints from our community, and fair enough. But in terms of our bylaws, and we've got a number of bylaws, and we've got a couple in the pipeline, namely cats and shop controllers, there's no stats in there as to how many warnings or how many infringements were issued. So we can't measure how our bylaws are actually being applied or used. So can that be something picked up next time?
I suppose that is one of those questions, putting together an annual report, how much detail do you go into? There's already a fair bit there, but it's still a valid question. Perhaps is that something you're willing to have management take on notice?
Yeah, for the next annual report.
For next year. Yeah.
It helps us also understand whether our bylaws are worth having at all, if we're not actually going to warn people or
pretty sure there has been some activity in that regard, but I wouldn't expect it to be available on the spot. Any others, Councillor Hull?
Thank you.
And then Councillor Bossley.
Is it possible to make that reflection with notice?
So we don't have to wait a year. Could we have a suitable mini report come back to Council in the questions on notice segment of the next meeting, please? Thank you. Anything else? I do have a few questions of my own. I did the right thing and sent up an email to management back on the 12th of October, but I didn't understand the answers, so I'll use the opportunity to ask the questions again. On page 48 of the agenda, got the key operating ratios. The operating surplus ratio is defined, and the target is said to be an operating surplus ratio averaging between 0 and 10% over any consecutive 5-year period. And I put it to management that it should be the last 5 years, which would make more sense if we're trying to measure things as we go along, rather than picking any 5-year period. So is that going to be corrected or have I got it wrong?
So you have got it wrong, and we took on board your point. I think probably should make it each 5-year period rather than even the last 5 years, because any 5-year period, well, I'm trying to say any 5-year period, is that each 5-year period encompasses every 5 years, which is what it should be. So we certainly will go about breaking that.
All right, well, as long as there'll be some sort of appropriate improvement in the definition, that would be great. In those ratios on page 49, the asset renewal funding ratio, I think Councillor Telfer might have been looking at that as well, but 58% asset renewal funding ratio seemed extraordinarily low. And just bears some explanation.
Sure.
Ms. Banoff.
And the asset funding ratio, it does relate to the net asset renewals as opposed to upgrades or new expenditure. This year, as opposed to last year, this year we had 43% of our capital expenditure was on renewal, whereas last year it was 61%. Last year, and you can see the ratio difference is 114%. That particularly captured the Everstown and social market and upgrades. This year we've got new upgrade expenditure in relation to Moorfield Park, Oriental Pool Streetscape. So the majority of our expenditure is new, and that ratio doesn't capture any new or upgrade expenditure. It captures really existing assets which are actually renewed. So we will fluctuate year on year. One other the impact on that ratio going forward will be, as I think we're adopting some of the asset management plans this tonight, the actual expenditure outline in those asset management plans will feed into our long-term plan. So we'll actually be able to take a more definite figure on the actual new figures going forward for that ratio.
So if it's going to fluctuate that much, between 58% and last year 114%, is it realistic to have a long-term target of 95 to 100%?
I think it is. I think over the, as we stated there, over the, over the next 3 years, it's going to be 96% and 91% over the term of the long-term plan. So, and as those sort of more accurate figures coming from the asset management plans feed into that ratio, we should be getting close to that 90% to 100%.
Very good. Next on page 62, I really didn't understand this one. There's a comment next to borrowings under the liabilities heading, of course, that current borrowings, the current loan principal component, increasing as existing loans are being paid down. No new loans established last financial year. So what I see in the columns is that the borrowings have actually increased by 6.4%. So why is that if we're paying it off?
Total borrowings. Borrowings in the balance sheet are represented by the 1245 plus the 4390. So we've got a current borrowing and a non-current borrowing, which is borrowings which will be repaid in more than 12 months' time. So overall, the borrowings have reduced from 6.805 down to 5.635. Now, just to understand why the current element increases, we pay a fixed repayment on the borrowings. So the capital element, as the borrowings reduce, the interest element becomes smaller. So the capital element being repaid within the next 12 months will actually increase. So for instance, we're paying $500,000 this year in repayments, and $200,000 of that represented by interest, as the borrowings reduce, the interest element will be smaller, so we'll pay $400,000 in capital and more interest.
Okay, well, if you could also just take on board that principal would be spelled with an A-L in that context, in case anyone cares.
Sure.
My next question was about what we call SWARA, the Regional Waste Authority. And I noted particularly the attendances of board members. So we have two board members nominated with deputies. And I noted that the attendances were somewhat low. And I don't mean to, it's no personal comment on those that we nominated because people are busy with other commitments, etc. But I particularly noted that even if you add up the deputy attendances and the proxy attendance, that I'm not sure all of the meetings were well covered. Is that a fair comment, Mr. Councillor Hull?
That's a good question. I looked at that myself. I'm the deputy, one of the deputies. There's two members and there's two deputies. But with Mr. Skull, if he doesn't attend a meeting, does that automatically mean that a staff member must fill his spot, or can... You know where I'm coming from, or does
well, with the way we, as I understand it, the council resolution was that Councillor Crossland would be member, Councillor Hull deputy, Mr. Skull member, and Ms. Densmore proxy.
Yeah. Can we all four sort of fill the same roles? In other words, can I fill in for Mr. Skull and Mr. Benmore pulling for, you know, like if they're not available. And I don't always know when the DM's not available. A couple of times I've, particularly on Zoom, pretended that Ian hasn't been there. I'm asking a question, if you're looking at all of this, or all these two positions, can I equally fill in for Mr. Scott? If Mrs. Denmore's not available, I don't know. So I haven't been advised there's vacancies that there's holders.
Well, obviously deputies can't attend if they don't know that there's a spot to fill. But can that question be answered by Mrs. Denmore?
So from the 1st of July, from the 1st of July, I have been attending, but this is about last year. Mm-hmm. Last year, Adrian was the member. I wasn't the deputy, I was a proxy for him when he couldn't attend. So we've attended every meeting. I wasn't yet appointed as a deputy. So you appointed me in January, but from the 1st of July this year. So I went as a proxy for Adrian without being appointed officially until the 1st of July. That's why it shows that I've been to three meetings, because I've only gone to the last three meetings of the year before my official start on the 1st of July.
So, given that SWARA is an independent organisation funded by the three councils, how is it possible for someone who's not officially on board as a deputy or a member to attend their board meetings?
So, I was only able to attend because Adrian set me up as his proxy for those meetings that he couldn't attend. Ray was there as well, and Ray was the official deputy for those. Because Ray said, so at the moment, if I can't attend a meeting, Ray said as my deputy, so Ray will attend.
Now, I haven't gone back to the resolution in January, but did that say, Ms. Denmore, that you could attend for Adrian in addition to Mr. Barnwell attending as his deputy?
No, that resolution appointed me as the board member on behalf of the City of Marion for SWARA on the 1st of July.
Right.
So SWARA replaced Adrian effectively from the 1st of July.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm trying to understand. How could Ms. Denmore...
the 3 meetings before.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was the authority that you had to be there?
Well, I was there as a proxy for Adrian because I was going to go on the board, but Ray was officially there as the deputy member.
So I really don't want to make a big deal of it, but it just sounds like you were there in no official capacity.
Yes, I mean, that's why they listed me as a proxy representative. So I couldn't make decisions, I couldn't participate in the voting. Ray did all that. Right. I was there as an add-on, I was learning about
it. Please don't get me wrong, I don't really object, but it's just a weird thing that the chief executive can make up this thing and that the board of SWARA can go along with it and have someone else turn up to the meeting.
I think they were just trying to kind of teach me the ways of SWARA before I started.
Well, that's very friendly.
About making something.
Very well. Okay. Is there any Councillor Hull?
On that point, Ian raised this with me a couple of days ago. This is a really important committee, and that's why you're asking this question. But the acknowledgement of Ian in particular is not listed in the committees that like the member might be on. And I think it's just as important as the audit committee, or it's just not acknowledged in the official listings of what elected members are doing.
Councillor Hull, I take your point. As a clarification, it is an independent board of an independent organisation, albeit one which the City of Marion partially funds, and it is a very substantial position, and that it oversees the expenditure of millions, many millions of dollars. But in the record of elected member involvement in committees, it does seem appropriate to mention somebody's involvement on the SWARA board, since they're appointed as, in a sense, as Marion Council's representative. Any comment from management?
There'd be no problem doing this. It is clearly attached to the report. It's in SWAR report, which is formally attached to our report, so it is there. But if it was felt useful to put it in the front report, there's no problem with that.
I think that's a fair suggestion, but anyway, we'll look at it for next year. Any other questions? Then, if there's no further discussion, I'll put those motions. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, perhaps before we get to the, I know elected members are very keen to get to the asset management reports, but I'm conscious of the good people in the gallery. Although we have some staff staying just for the asset management reports, do we?
We have at least one. Chris, we're using this one.
Yes. I'll leave it to you, members. Would someone like to move that the Aleppo Pines motion be dealt with forthwith? Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Seeker. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. So let's go to that item on the agenda. It is page 565. And then we'll resume the order in the agenda. So perhaps I could have a very brief summary. I'll look, Councillor Crossland, do you want to give a personal explanation?
Or just an explanation previously, I want to declare a perceived conflict of interest due to proximity of my home and to this area. There could be a perceived advantage or disadvantage to this dispute. I'll be leaving the chair.
All right, thank you. I'd invite Ms. Harvey forward to just give us a brief précis of where we are, in particular what's brought us to this meeting and what's happened since the last meeting when we addressed the issue. There have been a couple of twists and turns.
Yes, thank you through the chair. Our members may recall that the matter of the Aleppo Pines was brought to council earlier this year with a motion to from council to get on and remove the pines. Since that time, a decision motion was brought to council, which was adopted for us to go away and get some further expert advice on the removal of the pines. We have since done that, and this report presents the advice from a number of experts. That includes an ecologist, Mr. Tim Leung, who has done a full ecological assessment of the area. An arborist, Mr. Sam Hassan, who has specifically looked at the trees in the area, and also we've got some response from the MFS around the fire hazard in the area. So we present this report based on those expert opinions, which in summary has suggested that we undertake a plan of removal over a 6-year timeframe, and also a revegetation plan based on the biodiversity and the vegetation that would be specific to that area. So the reports are attached.
Thank you. Yes, very comprehensive report, page 565. So do I have anyone to move according to Councillor Schilling and seconded Councillor Duncan? Councillor Schilling, go ahead.
Thank you, Worship. Members, as you're aware, we did a rescission motion in July, I believe. And after some discussion, we passed a motion to seek expert opinion on what was going on there. The plan outlines a detailed way forward, and I thank staff for seeking that report. It's having discussions with Councillor Duncan, Councillor Crossland, and I have spoken to Councillor Gard. It has put it in a way, and it's identified trees that we weren't aware of that needed to be removed soon. As Councillor Crossland said to me, we would have done it in another way, but this report has outlined trees that need to go first and does it in a safe response. But it also looks at the damage the trees have done to the area and the ecological issues there, but it also puts in place a way to remediate those and make the area a vibrant area into the future. Acknowledges MFS and the fire risk inspections, and all of that sort of stuff, and it's at a point where I believe we can now move forward, and I'm happy with the result of this report.
And you, Councillor Cunningham.
I actually second Councillor Schilling's words. It was really important to me to actually have an expert opinion on this particular area because it has such an impact on the environment. And I'm pleased with all the work that the staff have done and the experts, and I agree with what's been written.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against? If not, then I'll simply put the motion. All those in favour? That's been carried unanimously. Thank you. So for those who are interested, you'll have the, you might have already seen the full report in the agenda. It's a public document, and the minutes will come out usually on Friday after we've had a chance to check them. But the motion as recommended in the, on page 566, that has been carried. Don't feel you have to stay for the whole meeting, but we're about to embark on a very exciting discussion of our asset management plans. So back to page 262. And
sorry,
finding that,
sorry,
262. And I would like to acknowledge Councillor Telfer's forensic examination of the AMPs in particular. Councillor Telfer, you want to move the motion?
Yes, I'd like to move the motion. And in doing so, yes, I was very interested to read the reports. And I was particularly interested in pages 276 and 77. Where this did a group of poorer assets, and was very interested in sheds being listed, and so it doesn't need to be done this minute, but obviously down the track in our planning we need to think of their value to our community groups who stone up their storage sheds. And over and above that, I was quite overwhelmed by the detail and the feistiness of the reports. I was also very interested on page 277 that the floor finishes are going to cost us $2.2 million over 10 years. And I'm waiting for the politics of every community group that wants a new carpet or a new floor, and the issue of some leases that say, like Cosgrove Hall, they have to redo their floor themselves every 5 years. So I'm interested in how that will all play out. I didn't know what services HVAC was, but it was heating, ventilation and air conditioning. I couldn't work it out. But there's $1.2 million worth to be spent on heating, ventilation and air conditioning. So that's a movement, I think, from air-conditioned buildings to air-conditioned buildings. So, yes, there were plenty of things there to challenge elected members as we move towards our planning day in January.
Thank you. And I do bring members' attention to the fact that on our screens, and we might need to share that for the members offline, that already staff have anticipated some changes based on feedback leading up to this meeting. I think that's a fair way of describing. So can that be shared for the floor in this place? So on the screen. Okay, what's happening? Now a couple of questions arise out of Councillor Telfer's remarks there. Is there asking management, is there a plan to have an equitable distribution of air conditioning across our rented council facilities? I say that because I'm aware that you know, there's this old one that doesn't have it, there's one that recently got it, the new ones are getting it. So is it in fact in the plan that all of these activity centres are going to eventually be air conditioned, or is it only the ones that push for it?
I'm going to need to defer to Mr. Harris or to Ian for that one, depending on who's best.
In short, through the chair, thank you for the question. That section refers, I probably need to also include that it's replacement and upgrade, so it's not just new and addition. Those would be those assets that are run down or at the end of their life. We have existing air conditioning and needing to improve or replace those. So just to round out the set. In that regard, there isn't a formal plan to say this is, we're going to bring in air conditioning at certain locations. However, through our engagement with obviously our tenants and our knowledge of our existing buildings that have that infrastructure, that's something that we would build into the program in a rolling sense. So it is something that we could look at if an equitable distribution or that type of cataloging, that's something that we could take on and pull together to assess which assets do have, don't have, and how we could bring them up to speed or get them where they're at.
Well, just as we've done with irrigation and so on, could elected members have a list of which facilities have air conditioning and which don't? I mean, we may decide to do nothing with that.
Yep.
But and it may be quite fair enough as it is, but I think it would be a good opportunity for a stock take. And then the next question is about this floor finishings topic. Obviously a fair bit of money going towards it. Maybe it just seems a lot when you bunch it all together. But is that the $1 million plus that Councillor Telfer referred to, is that just to maintain, whether it be carpet or polished floorboards, what the tenanted premises currently have? Mr. Rees?
Through the chair, again, and thank you for that question. The clarifications I give there is the floor finishes would also include anything that's a hard surface or a court surface. So some of those, maybe that there's some underfloor support that would be needed as well as they get to the end useful lot. So again, just to give a breadth of, it's not just carpet or tiles necessarily, it would also be bigger expanses of flooring. I think in some of our halls and some of those other spaces where there's timber, and those are more significant costs than carpet replacement. And then it is a mix again of having to either renew it entirely or maintenance, and across the numbers of sites we have, Mayor, that is an aggregation of the cost of all of those things.
And if I could ask you, Mr. Harris, to just email members with a memo about whether some tenants or all tenants have the same obligations in relation to maintenance of floors. Again, just from that equitable point of view, and I would have thought by now that the tenancy obligations were tending to be uniform, but it would be good to know if some committees have to pay for floor polishing and some don't. But that doesn't have to come to a general council meeting, but since we're talking about those things. Any other questions, Councillor Hull?
I'm happy to second
the motion. Seconded the motion.
Councillor Telfer's raised some good points. They're all important issues that should be addressed, including the sheds. Anything that seems to be at such standard probably should be replaced. But this is overshadowed by an item I'm going to focus on, Mr. Mayor. It's in the open space asset management area under maintenance. $12.7 million per year on vendors. That's more than what we've just discussed. Every year they're spending $12.7 that's in there year after year. I've got two questions. Is this similar to other councils? That's one question. Or is this some special thing for Marion? Not so special.
And Councillor, do you have a page number? It just helps us all.
No, I don't.
No, that's you. No, fair enough.
It sounds very high, doesn't it? I'm just wondering what it's K, is it thousands rather than millions?
Page, yeah, that works well with through the chair. This is page 352, right. Reference of members.
352, yes.
The other question I have is...
That's 12,700.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not millions.
No.
Thousands.
Just regard.
Yeah. No, that's the you just about had been phoning 000.
My apologies. Well, there was all those zeros up the top. I added it all.
Yeah, well, I'm prone to adding one occasionally, so don't worry about that. Any other questions? Moved, it's been seconded.
The other question, because back to 305. With the condition of buildings. Overall condition of some buildings just built. It's noted up here that we perhaps have been a little bit negative on some of our buildings. I would hope that Cove City Centre is still in excellent condition.
Well, Ecclestown's only average, and that's just
sound, yeah, that's right. So I think there's a couple of sheds we have which are in excellent condition. Maybe I'm missing the brackets for excellent and good, but I would have liked to think that when we were building buildings for council, we would endeavour to build excellent buildings. So just maybe something that needs to be a rhetorical question. Yeah.
So to be fair, not asking for names to be named, but marking Edwardstown, is that the... Yeah, that's the function centre and club rooms. I mean, marking them as average, was that just a clerical error? Or is that the sort of expert opinion?
Through the chair, that feels very low. Can we add to that anyone in the gallery?
It's $8 million worth of average, yeah.
Correct. Through the chair, it's something that we'd be happy to dive a bit deeper into and come back and clarify. But the definitions are on page 313. And some of the things that does highlight is about wear and tear of use. And it may be through the expert opinion, but we'll validate this, is that those have been higher trafficked venues. So yes, they're newer, but they may already be showing higher wear and tear in perhaps entry areas and the like. So that's something we can take that comment on and look at.
Well, it's time to put down a few doormats then, right?
Yeah, I guess the question that follows is should we be changing something about the way we build these buildings if after a short period of time we're rating them at average and not excellent?
Through the chair, I understand that question. We all do. It doesn't sound right. I'm wondering whether we can just add it to our list. Perhaps Jamie have things to check from an administrative level, and we might just circulate a response on the call.
I guess so. We can put a note that says subject to checking or something.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Very good. So it's been moved and seconded. Any other questions? Then I'll motion for those AMPs. So raise your hands. That's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. It's an error on the page. Jumping forward to page 487. And in relation to Capella Reserve, I would like to compliment all concerned to the way that staff and elected members worked together on getting to a design which we were proud to put out to the community, and obviously we await their response, but it was a good collaborative effort. Councillor Crossland to move.
I'll move as printed, and just on as we're congratulating staff, just like to say that the way in which they worked at the school as well was great, from early consultation to workshops to follow-ups. Hence the great result we got in actually knowing what the people that they want.
Seconded, Councillor Duncan. Anything to add? There's no one speaking against. All those in favour, raise your hand. It's carried unanimously. Thank you. On to the shopping trolley bylaw. I did raise with staff concern about a couple of ambiguities in the, as I saw it, in the recommendation. And management did respond to that.
Could we sort out paragraph 9, the concern that the committee had?
Yes, it probably would. We would benefit from a summary of what's happened there. Where we've put forward the bylaw after consultation, the committee have come back and said, "Why don't you've got the year wrong? Why don't you change that?" So we've done that with further consultation and sent it back to the committee. And then the committee has come back and said, "Oh, there's something else you could change as well. Why don't you go and consult on that again?" Which starts to sound a bit repetitive, but perhaps you could fill us in on how that's all come about and where to from here, Ms. DeVillehoons.
Thank you, Mayor. Through the chair, for that summary, you've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what happened in the sequential filing that we did. We council decided to let a variation bylaw in September to address the concerns of the anomaly of the date year, which in Councillor put out in good faith, thinking that as Councillor set that bylaw in motion and engaged on that bylaw, that presumably that was the bylaw that had to be written into law, but we were told otherwise. Councillor took that opportunity to further vary the bylaw to confirm to the committee and to potential residents and retailers that the substantive parts of the bylaw would not be enforced, i.e. the fining mechanisms in place until February next year, so we'd have a phasing in period and an education campaign. Subsequent to that, LRC decided to had heard the matter again and had thought that in addition and perhaps finally that paragraph 9, why it was worded relating to exemptions was too ambiguous. And in subsequent communications with the LRC, with between staff and the secretary of the LRC, we have commenced a review of that paragraph in order to give council some greater certainty that the bylaw as it will eventually stand, will stand up in court and stand up to any challenges by retailers or people who get an expiation to be able to find that process will stand up. In a point of difference for the last interaction we have with the LRC, I guess there is an understanding that this bylaw will still be active from the 2nd of November. So there is a report details a motion on the table to disallow, as I understand, and then you might be able to help me out with the parliamentary procedures, but that still requires a member of parliament to come in and actively pursue that motion for it to be enacted by the parliament. And so what we're hearing is that basically it's going to be left on the table with an understanding that the bylaw will become active, because it will become active tonight if members decide to endorse the package before you. It will be endorsed as varied, which will mean that the commencement will be delayed until February. Staff will, in the meantime, work on, I guess, a solution to paragraph 9 that we're comfortable with, that we think the LRC will be comfortable with. That will, of course, require another round of consultation, which, while somewhat frustrating, is also doable, it's manageable. We're just conscious that this will lead into the end of the year, and it might be early next year when this is consulted on and brought back before council to be made again, hopefully finally.
A couple of points arise, and then I'll invite comment from Mr. Hiridis as well. So the disallowance process, because once the bylaw process is put in train, there's a time limit on the ability of either House of Parliament to actually kill the bylaw, to disallow. But if a motion is moved to disallow the bylaw, then that can be followed through and either abandoned or voted on affirmatively at any time into the future for the life of that parliament. So it's kind of in limbo in a sense, or rather there's an axe over its head which may be taken away if the committee eventually decides that it's fine. So that brings us to the point where next week we have a bylaw on against abandoned trolleys, but we have promised not to enforce it temporarily. Now, to address the issue of the advice that's come from the committee secretary, at least, not that I'm here to give legal advice, but when I see the discretion of a council to not enforce a bylaw replaced by a confined discretion that allows exemption only in specified cases, I don't think it's a recipe for avoiding litigation. It's probably an invitation to litigation. I'm not sure that it's going to be a panacea to follow that recommendation. Nonetheless, that's what's before us. Mr. Harides.
Thank you, Mayor. Probably some other information and adding to your earlier question. The feedback we got from the committee was this was another scenario, right or wrong, where it becomes a unique bylaw or a first test of these sorts of conditions for any council across the state. So I do believe that gave some anxiety to the committee, and particularly around wanting to get it right. If it becomes a blueprint for other councils, I just guess you're aware of their thinking process. We're also very keen, given what has happened with these bylaws, particularly with our council, that Mr. Delacombs has mentioned staff. It was myself and Mr. Delacombs who sought the meeting with the committee, because we really did want to clarify one, opportunities of how we can work with the executive so that we don't have scenarios, whether they're new and unique bylaws or something that's quite common, of having to reconsult two or three times over. He did indicate that as a result of some of our work and a couple of other councils, that's what drove the guidelines. So those guidelines that you saw a reference to that were raised in July were the committee trying to actually improve that engagement councils. Secondly, they've also offered almost a consultation with pre-lodgement service now, whereas we're drafting bylaws, being able to go to them early, flesh out any questions, understand what they're after, because we did reflect the frustration that we worked with Faith, we presented these, and it's very difficult to do rolling amendments as the committee then gets further information or reads them again and decides that we need councils to go and test further. And that's really talking to the strength of the whole system, and then we're not going out to our community saying mixed messages about this isn't quite right and the interplays between government and local government. So we've done a lot to try and improve how we can engage with them early. Unfortunately, in this case, it is an additional occasion, potentially to test. It is before the council that if we feel this is something we want to progress as is, it's just that we've got a very strong indication of this full support for this bylaw, but they'd like us to address that issue around clarity on clause 9.
So a question, and please excuse us, councillors, to going into this in so much detail, but it's pretty important that we kind of understand this complex set of recommendations. As I understand it, staff agree that we should amend the paragraph 9 so that there's some constraint on exemptions. So in bringing this report to council, why didn't staff, based on legal advice, get that exemption clause drafted and bring it to us for approval tonight so that we could kick the ball off, so to speak, rather than have a two-stage process that was signed off on what we've got, thinking it's incomplete, and telling the committee that we're going to change it later?
Yes, through the chair. In response, that process has started. It is in works. It's been a matter of days turnaround in between agendas and reports due to be able to give us some certainty that we were going to present a paragraph and an amended bylaw for consultation that would be satisfactory, hasn't been able to be achieved in that time.
Okay, so that's something that might come up the next general council meeting, for example, or as soon as possible. Very good. All right. Any other questions, Councillor Hull?
I was just going to move.
Move the motion as Richard. Any further?
Well, look, it would be good to have this nailed down, but it is important to get it right, and staff need time to get it right. I accept that. The company thing is that, as opposed to the cap curfew bylaw, this one seems like it might be. If we actually tweak it up the right way, it is in process. And you make the points to me that we need to get it right. So in order to get it right, a bit of time. In the scale of things, shopping trolleys, and I'm repeating myself, I know, but shopping trolleys have been an issue in this chamber since before I even started. You know, a number of councils that and all of them that were involved are now deceased. Raise many concerns about shopping trolleys over a long period of time. So a little bit longer, a couple of days, as Colin McDougall would say, we'll get the whole package right. So I'm happy as I can be with the progress of this, and fingers crossed it'll get over the line. And Mr. Caridi's made a really good point that we are in frontier country in South Australia with this bylaw, and it will be getting a lot of attention from near and far.
Is that seconded, Councillor Maxson?
I think Councillor Hull said that.
Very good. Anyone in opposition? Councillor Valescu, question?
Yeah, I've got a question. Look, just a little bit concerned what happened with CAT. So can we get a guarantee from staff that the council's done its best to facilitate this happening, that there's nothing we'll be pulled up on?
Thank you for your question, Councillor. Insofar as a guarantee, what I can say is obviously not only have we followed up directly, and that's included myself with the committee, you will have noted we circulated that they've also offered words for us to consider. So I think it's a massive step forward. It's a direct engagement with us, and they've given a clear indication that they want this to go through. I can't guarantee because we're not making that call, but I think we've really put our best foot forward to get this right and work with the committee for success.
I can add there is a qualitative difference to the CAT bylaw process, because here what the committee is suggesting is not going against the grain of what we're trying to achieve, whereas with the CAT bylaw it was really gutting the essence of the bylaw. Any further debate? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. It's carried unanimously. Thank you. So we're on page 544. Representation review report, where we get to this is what we're up to again, sending out the report for more consultation now that we finalised our thing. Yes. Councillor Crossland.
I'd like to put it as printed, and I think the report is self explanatory.
Indeed.
I like it.
Councillor Masika, second.
Yes, Your Lordship. We can offer that information.
Very succinct. If there are no questions, I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you, and thanks for coming, Mr. McKenzie. lots of work went into it, I know. Page 559, Ballara Park Kindergarten, letting them do a little bit of an upgrade. Why we have kindergartens, I don't know, but we do. Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, I'm tempted to move a deferral motion with this, and Councillor Pryor would know as quite well that at a number of board briefings have raised the prospect of us getting this right, this site right, for not only the kindergarten, but for the other users of the broader reserve. last time anything came up with Ballara Park Kindergarten, I had a very conflict of interest. My daughter was attending, and that was about extending the fence line out to allow more playground space. That was controversial. Some people didn't want that because they couldn't keep it footy around anymore. But members would realise that the tennis courts are no longer, and we've got to actually sort out, and it's on our schedule, to do like we did at Hamilton Park. Maybe have one tennis court open for the public. But it's an opportunity to actually work with the kindergarten to see what aspect of the building is going to be more important to them. What I'm getting at, I would like that discussion to happen first before we get approval and then going ahead with them not realising what their opportunities are and what our opportunities are for that. Because I think we can actually get the most out of that site. We've got a shortage of open space in Warradale. There's a motion on the books at the moment. We seek out and purchase more open space. So we need to do the best we can with the limited amount of open space we've got. And any encroachment by the Ballara Park Kindergarten is considered by the local community as taking away their open space, because unless you're paying a fee to have your child at Ballara Park Kindergarten, you can't get access to it. If you're an adult, you shouldn't be in there anymore. So I have been mistaken the point, but I'm surprised that this has even come up. I raised it in a number of ward briefings and a phone call today about it. And unfortunately, ward briefings sometimes seem to be a one-way direction, Mr. Mayor, in terms of information, and that's not how they should be working.
Well, Councillor, I take it that you're moving to defer consideration of the matter.
Until such time as we have a broader discussion about the broader reserve of Ballara Park in the Garden City.
Well, at the moment, would you like to defer it for 1 month to allow further discussion with staff, etc.?
I hope that's in order.
Yeah, good. Moving to the November the 27th meeting, gives time to discuss. Seconded Councillor Pryor. Unless there's any opposition, all those in favour raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. So, Councillor Hull, if we could leave it with you to follow up those concerns and questions and possibilities with management. Thank you. I'll go from there. So, page 667, the draft carbon neutral plan. Councillor Telfer.
I'll move as per the recommendation. There's been a lot of work gone into this at the forums and by staff, and now it's going out to the community, and they will be very interested in the many ways that we can work towards carbon neutral for our operations in 10 years' time. So it's a challenge that we are going to look forward to.
Probably another very good example, actually, of collaboration with staff. A lot of work by Ms. Gibbons in the draft, and a lot of feedback from elected members, and we've come up with something we could proudly put to the community. Councillor Pryor?
And there will be more on this. It's an ever-changing field, so I think we could go to the consultation as it stands and be aware that in the future anything could happen.
Mayor, any opposition? A question, Councillor Hull.
Can we actually try and expect a better response rate than we have been in recent times with consultation? Point 9 was 4, I think, for all the arts community in the city. I don't know whether we're hitting the target, Mr. Mayor, that's what we're doing.
Could we just leave that to management to try and extend our efforts. Now, we've recently, over the last 12 months, Councillor Hull and others, we funded Greening Adelaide Wicked Labs project or something. And part of what they did was to list just about every group who had anything to do with environmental advancement or protection in the city. Now, that gives us a whole lot of people that we can readily contact for something particularly on this topic.
I think so, that's a fantastic point.
So we'll just leave it to management to make an extra effort consultation. Thank you. And Ms. Close is pointing out from the motion as originally drafted, a very minor capture-all ability for the chief executive to make necessary amendments if needed. We haven't seen that little creature before. Why is that incorrect then, Mr. Lyons?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, I like it, but I haven't seen it.
Formatting.
Through the chair, I had a few typos.
Yeah. Councillor Telfer, without me knowing, I expect, has done her usual fine degree of work and spotted a few typos. So that's what the acting chief executive would fix before it goes out to public consultation. Very well. Now, I take it that the mover and the seconder are happy with that blueprint. Blue, as in print that is blue.
Did I say
no, you moved it actually. So, Councillor Telfer, I beg your pardon, Councillor Telfer and Councillor Pryor are happy to adopt that word. Sorry, it's just course of habit. Yes. That being so, I think I can put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now on to page 683, the final Disability Action and Inclusion Plan, and whatever happens, we have to get through this tonight because the State Government wants it in the mail tomorrow. Councillor Seeker to move, Councillor Clancy, Councillor Seeker, you wish to start.
Yeah, thanks, Your Worship. I would like to say, look, reading up the current version, it's very good and it's open up for all areas where and facing out all issues, all areas which can impede to people accessing medical cancer services. Anyway, also, I find the Disability Action and Inclusion Plan is just to provide opportunity for people who are living with disabilities to be able to access the services for medical cancer. So on that note, I'd like to move as by written.
Thank you. Councillor Clancy.
Just thanks to Ms. Black for her work on this and
looking forward to it. Yes, lots of hard work went into it. We appreciate it. Any questions or opposition? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Anything else interesting on the agenda? Oh, yes, elected member representatives on positions.
Page
698. Having said that, there may be a procedural motion coming our way. So, yes, Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. With the leave of the meeting, I'm going to ask that my motion with notice is considered first, because that determines the way in which we do the voting process. So, ask the meeting consider that motion for this particular one that's the next on the agenda.
So there is a procedural motion. Is it seconded? Councillor Hull, wish to speak on what's procedural, so we'll just go straight to the panel. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. That's carried by majority. So we'll bring forward the the motion on page 811. There's been a fair bit of chopping and changing over the years. The preferential versus first past the post voting. Councillor Crossland to move.
Yeah, just briefly, look, this is obviously, there's quite a few different voting ways around the world. Obviously, Australia has a adopted something slightly different to most places. But I just wanted to make people aware that there is a simpler process. Whether or not it's fair is really, I suppose, up for debate. But I thought I'd put this to elected members so that you can have a look at it and then decide the way in which we're going to vote. And usually that's the way we vote then for the rest of the year.
Is that second? Councillor Schilling. You seem shocked, Your Worship. I support Ian's motion. I support it mainly on the basis of assisting staff with the recent, I think it was the Australia Day Council vote. We had a tie for four, so we couldn't decide where this system would allow staff to go boom, 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 boom. Personally, I'm a supporter of preferential voting, but in this instance, I think for the ease of staff and for the low number, I would support first past the post.
Can I just ask you about one thing?
Mm.
You've mentioned the fact that on the Australia Day Council ballot, which we had, that there was a draw
mm.
in fourth place. Is it not more mathematically likely that there will be a draw under first past the post voting?
Yes, but there's a second part of the motion states about with putting the name in the hat and draw it out, and that's the person who gets elected.
Which we could equally do with preferential voting.
We could.
Any other speakers against? Councillor Bolescu?
We've got a system that works. The method of first past the post is subject to shenanigans. It also allows a strong voting block with less than majority to actually control the positions, especially if they're able to split the opposition vote. And I guess I've got a couple of concerns. First of all, you will have a situation where people will be elected without the majority support. And I've seen that in my first term, and it wasn't actually very cohesive. The second concern is that if an elected member believes in a system of voting being better, then it's about the system of voting and not whether it's easy for staff. There's 13 votes. If really want to look at a system, maybe look at the Condorcet system voting, if you really want to have something a little bit more, if you've got problems with the preferential system. But this is a system we use to get elected. This is what gets our state MPs elected. This is what get our federal politicians elected at that one spot area. So I think this is a better system for us to use. And it's just, as I said, let's look at for multi-member positions, let's look at the Condorcet method, because that is a little bit clearer with some of those positions. But members, I am really concerned. And I guess the other thing is that, are we looking to change voting systems to get a certain result? I hope not, but I guess we'll see when people nominate, who nominates and who supports this.
There has been mention of the role of staff in counting, etc. So I'll just ask Ms. Waits for comment if she wishes.
The first past the post is much easier and timely during a council meeting to count and get a result. From the last few times we've done preferential vote, we have to move on and do other items while it's sorted out and considered and then come back to items. So from a ease and speed during the meetings, first past the post is an easy.
All right, now we've had speakers for and against. Any other speakers in favour?
I was going to, Mr. Mayor, but I didn't want to appear to be divisive or be engaging in shenanigans. So.
Well, that's a typical Irish term, but you can enter the debate without referring to that issue.
This is a matter for the individual. And no reflection should be cast on that individual, and I don't intend to. I wish you all well with your decision making.
Any other speakers against? Councillor Telfer.
I believe that preferential voting is a systematic way of coming up with an outcome. And if that outcome's not sorted, then you've got to do the toss of the coin or look in the hat.
And the speakers in favour. There being no, Councillor Crossland to close the debate.
Just following on from what people have said, look, preferential treatment. Preferential voting was something new to me. It's not used anywhere else in the world, so it must be really good. It's mainly, this particular system is Australian. When it came to shenanigans, and it wasn't until I ran for council that I realised what shenanigans really were, and how you manipulate with preferential voting, especially with preferences and things like that. So I do see why people like it. So you can actually get someone who isn't that popular through with preferential voting. So I do see the benefit to some people. As far as my maths is concerned, a lot of the time we have two people and we have 13 people voting. I'd say the odds of a vote are usually fairly slim. That's awesome up with that. Thank you.
I put the motion, all those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. Motion is defeated.
We did a preferential vote.
I've got to pay that one.
No preferential treatment.